former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Rolling on this Thursday edition of the Lombardi Line alongside former NFL general manager Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Got a great 2 hours on tap coming up in about 30 minutes. VSiN host Mike Somich will join us, get some of his favorite plays for Thursday night football. Hour two, it is Mike Palm, VP of operations here at Circa Resort and Casino, where I'm broadcasting from. Another Palms pressing 3 day, which is wonderful. And when it's Thursday, Michael, all it means is that I am outmanned and outgunned in the name department. Three Mike Michaels on the program today. How are we doing?
Yeah, we're doing great. I mean, we're doing good. You know, it's a busy day today. Thursdays are always busy. It's our Friday, Stormy. You know, I know you don't get a day off. Neither do I. So it's our Friday. So we'll enjoy it, you know. And I do want to say, you know, yesterday we found out the passing of Coach Knight, the basketball coach at Indiana, which for me, look, Coach Knight has a lot of people that don't really that don't like his coaching style or didn't like what he did. But for me personally, he was tremendous as a learning a tool. We would always go to Indiana every year, Belichick and I, and we would be able to have lunch with him, go to his favorite luncheonette, and he would just sit there and start teaching us about coaching and leadership and all those things. And watching his team practice was one of the greatest experiences of my life. I mean, the ball boys were incredibly organized. It was unbelievable. And, you know, and for me, it was such a valuable lesson. It'll always go down. I have a picture of my youngest son in an Indiana little shirt that I still have, and I love it because it reminds me of when I went to Indiana, listened to him talk and all that. So, you know, what he's done in basketball, I think if you listen to the video of him talking about Michael Jordan and how great Michael Jordan is, and to play him at center is great. And then finally, the ability for him to, my biggest memory is I got a phone call when we were getting ready to hire a coach in Cleveland. Art Modell called my house and said, he called me at the office and said, guess who I talked to, young man? And I said, Mr. Modell, I have no idea. Art, I have no idea. He said, I just got off the phone with Bob Knight. And I said, what happened? He said, Bob Knight called me on the phone. I was at the house in Willoughby. And he said, Art, this is Bob Knight from Orrville, Ohio. I think you should hire Bill Belichick as a coach. He's the next best coach you'll ever hire. And he hung up the phone. And that was it.
No way.
And that's why he hired him.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a story. What a memory. And obviously a man that had, you know, a complicated legacy, but what a remarkable coach that he was, as good at the X's and O's as anybody. And for today's day and age in college basketball, where I feel like there's NIL and it's all about the personalities and players, a coach that is just such a staple and a figure that everything revolved around him and his message. And unfortunate that he passed, but obviously so memorable in so many ways. And when you say that about Bill Belichick, and we obviously know what he said about Michael Jordan before he ever played in the NBA, is really remarkable, the foresight that he had.
Yeah, I mean, it was really, you know, and the reason it's interesting, the relationship happened when he was at West Point, and it was because of his dad, who was a Navy coach, and they kind of would compete against each other and would talk about it. But the lessons that you learn when you separate the chair and you separate all the things, kind of the personality that kind of got in the way of what he did really well, and you boil, you know, we're all flawed as human beings, right? And so when you separate that and you really, what you gain from his wisdom, you know, just the fact that he told, I love the fact that he told the general manager of the Portland Trailblazers to draft Michael Jordan. And the guy says, well, you know, we already have a guy. I mean, how could we, you know, we already got Clyde Drexler. Why would we take Michael Jordan? He said, well, then play him at center. I think that's really perfect.
Yeah. And on a day like today, to your point, like we want to remember and talk about the good, and you remember the graduation rates that he had, which were top tier, and the things that he did for a lot of those players after basketball. And yeah, really, like we said, complicated, I think is a good word, but an incredible legacy that of course he had out there at Indiana, and unintentional, even the color, but in his honor today, certainly. Always tough to transition out of something like that, but a memory and a legacy that we'll remember forever. But the Texas Rangers, Michael, also yesterday, I think pretty special, the first World Series in franchise history for them coming through yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, it was remarkable, right? What, 4-1? They had no problem. And, you know, it's and lost their best, what, lost their best hitter during it, too.
Yep.
And they were able to come through, and Bruce Bochy comes back and wins. I mean, shutout for the Diamondbacks. I feel bad for the Phillies, right? I mean, they're one game away from playing the Rangers, and the Phillies are probably sitting there saying, we would have given them a better series. But that's the way it is. Congratulations to the Rangers. Does this mean that there could be some championships in that Arlington area down there? You know, don't the Cowboys play right near there? Do we have that championship feeling? I mean, last year, that's all they talked about in Philly was the championship feeling, right?
I'm sure they would like that.
The Phillies went to the World Series. You know, you catching on any of that?
I'm sure Jerry Jones is. Can't wait to see his media spot. but yeah, it's, you know, actually my segue to that, Michael, is this is for the Rangers, the first in franchise history. There are 12 NFL teams that still have yet to win a Super Bowl, and a few that could put themselves in position this year. The Detroit Lions are the shortest shot of that bunch. But do you think that this year or in like years upcoming that one of those teams that's never gotten one could finally kind of get over the hump and get there?
Yeah, I mean, look, I would like to think Cleveland could get there, but this quarterback saga of Cleveland just continues to go on and on and on, you know, and they can't get that right. I mean, Cleveland, I know this sounds insane, right, because they paid so much for a quarterback, but they're a good quarterback away from being a team that could compete,
yeah,
right? And the Bengals, like, I decided to throw out all my numbers, right? Because the Bengals season started last week, really, against your Niners. So at 14-1, they're a good play because they have everything. I think the Ravens are a way better team than that 15-1 number and the Dolphins at 850. I think that's wrong. In my power rankings, that's wrong. So yeah. I think that has, to me, you have to consider that. I think Buffalo's right at 16-1. I think Buffalo's a team sliding. Now, you know, I'm sure they'll play Cincinnati a lot tougher this week with the rest and all that. But Josh Allen, you know, missing yesterday because of the shoulder. Remember, he went in the blue tent, right? You know, and he tried to run. He got his ankle twisted. He's going to have to carry this team, Stormy, and I worry about that.
The Buffalo Bills and the Minnesota Vikings, two teams that have made the most appearances in a Super Bowl, but have yet to win one. And yes, the Bills sitting there 16-1. As far as teams that have yet to win a Super Bowl, Lions at 11-1, the shortest shot, Bengals 14-1, Bills 16-1, Jags 16-1. And then it obviously falls off of that. The Tennessee Titans, one of those teams that has not won a Super Bowl. And I don't think at 130-1, anyone will be playing them, but they might be tonight.
You're not playing it?
I shan't be doing that. No, Michael, but maybe you could tempt me tonight on Thursday night football taking on the Steelers. This is an interesting matchup, I think, on Amazon Prime coming up tonight at 8:15 Eastern. The Steelers are laying 3. We always talk about the Mike Vrabel, just like we talk about Mike Tomlin, as an underdog, right? And so you're getting 3 points with a tremendous performance the other day from Will Levis in his rookie debut. Different situation, obviously, this time around, going on the road, first road start, how you're going to perform. I'll get into some of the numbers in a moment, but the history that Mike Tomlin has against rookie quarterbacks, how are you breaking down tonight's action?
Well, I mean, look, I think it starts, right, with Will Levis. And when you break Will Levis down and you watch him play in the last game, he made some really good throws. But a lot of those throws were kind of, I don't want to call them off script, but they were a little bit of the delayed action. It wasn't a rhythm throw. You know, the deep ball to Hopkins, which I don't know how Hopkins wasn't called for offensive pass interference. I really don't. I mean, he threw the corner out of the way, right? I mean, he just did that. And then he made a great throw in the back of the end zone. So I think he did a good job, but this is a different story. You know, I think when you look at this and you think he's the 7th quarterback, and I looked at my notes today, that they'll face the Steelers in their first season in a night game. And I hate to report this to Titans fans, but everybody's 0-6. You know, the Pittsburgh has an ability to bounce back. Now, I think with Minkah Fitzpatrick not in the game tonight, that makes their defense a little hard. You can run the ball on Pittsburgh gives up 4.6 yards a carry. So there, you've been able to, but Cam Hayward's back now. So that changes all the numbers. So this is going to be a really hard game because if Henry doesn't get going, and I think it'll be harder for him to get going, then it puts a lot of pressure on Levis to create plays on third down off on script.
And with their tackle, Chris Hubbard, out as well, dealing with a concussion. That was my first thought. I was like, yeah, it stinks that you're not going to have Minkah Fitzpatrick out there on the back end dealing with that hamstring. But you do get Cam Hayward back. You do have TJ Watt and Alex Highsmith coming off the edge. So that would worry me if I was Tennessee from this standpoint. And also, with what you said about DeAndre Hopkins, Michael, I see a lot of people betting that over on his prop tonight, sitting at 51.5. It's already been bet up to 53.5. But obviously, the big performance that he had last week and that connection that he had with Will Levis, do you see him being that go-to safety net target again for Will Levis in this spot?
Yeah, I think to me that, you know, he's on the injury list, but isn't he always on the injury list?
Yeah, he's expected to play.
Like, I don't think that's a factor. I think a lot of this is going to come down to, can these tackles for Tennessee, can they protect? Are they going to give Levis the time? And if Henry can get running, because they've been able to run the football effectively the last few weeks. I mean, they've got their running game going. And when they have balance, they're really good.
The numbers here real quickly this last minute before we have to hit the break. For rookie quarterbacks against Mike Tomlin, specifically in Pittsburgh, 1-15 straight up, 0-5 in primetime. The lone winner was Dak in 2016. Overall, rookie quarterbacks, they lost to CJ Stroud in week 4. But prior to that, 24-4 the Steelers were against rookie quarterbacks, including 9 straight going into that game in week 4. So they've had a lot of success in the past. We'll see what they can do this time around to trip up Will Levis now that they have a little bit of tape.
Do you trust? We didn't even mention
and Kenny Pickett's injury. Let's throw that in too as well.
you didn't even mention his name. Like, you just avoided him. You know, he's 5-1 straight up and 6-0 at night games with the Steelers. Did you know that? You didn't even mention him.
Well, we'll get to that after the break real quickly. How about that? Let's get into the Kenny Pickett of it all when we return. He's dealing with a rib injury. He says he's going to play. We'll discuss that and more with News or Noise coming up next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Lombardi Line. Let's wrap up some of this Thursday night football conversation. The Steelers, a 3-point home favorite.
Kenny Pickett.
Yes.
You avoided him. You avoided Kenny Pickett. I saw you do that.
I said we'll get there. A 3-point favorite at home tonight against the Titans. Low total 37. But yes, I will put out that note that you said right before the break. Kenny Pickett, 5-1 straight up, 6-0 ATS in night games with the Steelers. There we go. The note is out there. It is true. But he's also dealing with a rib injury coming into this one. He practiced full. He said, I'm absolutely going out there. How do you think that he impacts this game tonight?
Well, I think, look, there's a couple things they got to do with Pittsburgh. It's got to be a team effort, right? I mean, Pittsburgh, their whole premise is built around running the football. They're 29th in the league in yards per attempt rushing, right? They're 26th in attempts, excuse me. So not only can they not run it, they don't even try to run it, partly because they can't run it. You know, what happens is you get off of the track when you don't run it. I mean, they've only had 61 first downs in the games they've played. They've played 7 games. They got 61 first downs. What does that tell you? So everybody wants to blame the coordinator because they think the players are so good. The offensive line's got to play better. Now, the one thing about this game is the last few weeks, you know, teams have been able to run the football on Tennessee. It's surprising, but they have. Now, a lot of it I was basing on the fact that Tart didn't play, but Tart played last week and Atlanta ran for 140 yards. Right? Atlanta ran for 140 yards, so they were able to run the ball. Before that, Baltimore ran for 139. Before that, Indianapolis ran for 193. So if Pickett can get some kind of run game going and stay out of third down, which they're a disaster on third down. They're 27th in the league in third down. Then they all have a chance. But Tennessee, you got to throw the ball really well to beat Tennessee, which means you got to block up front. Mm-hmm. And I think the root of the problem is the real root of the problem is their offensive line.
Yep, it has been a problem. And for Pickett personally, just 61% completions. He only has 1 passing touchdown, his last 4 starts, 2 total touchdowns from Pickett in his last 4 starts. So obviously things need to get turned around. It's great that they're over 500 right now. I would like them to keep winning to hit my season win total for the year. So please continue to do so. But this game feels interesting to me. So I know you don't make official plays on the Thursday night games, Michael, but if you had a gut feeling for how this one's going to go, what comes to mind?
You know, I can't go against Tomlin. I think on paper you would want to take. You want to take the Titans, but there's always something about this game that makes you nervous, right? There's always something about it. I just don't know how, you know, you do that, right? So I'd probably lean towards Pittsburgh. Okay. Just a lean, you know. But, you know, it's going to be ugly, right? But, you know, when you look at Vrabel, in games where the spread is 3 or less, Vrabel's 21-16 straight up. He's 19-16-2 against the spread. So it isn't like you say, well, they got Vrabel and he's getting points on the road. Well, wait a minute. Those numbers aren't exactly lighting it up, right? Mm-hmm. So the way Pittsburgh played last week was disappointing against a good Jacksonville team. But they're going to have to throw the ball, just like Pittsburgh's going to. I mean, Tennessee's going to have to throw the ball. With Hayward back in there, they're going to have to throw the football. And can Levis throw the ball? So I'm going to go against the rookie quarterback, and I'll go with Mike Tomlin. That would be my lean.
All right. I love it. We'll discuss this game more at length a little bit later on in the show, but time to continue with some of the headlines around the National Football League in news or noise. Let's hustle through them. Run the open.
Is it news?
Corleone is a man who insists on hearing bad news immediately.
Or just noise?
Are you going to act like this is news?
Just noise.
Let's separate the impactful from the insignificant with one simple question. News or noise?
All right, let's do it. And we're going to start right here in Vegas, where new interim head coach Antonio Pierce talked to media for the first time yesterday, telling reporters he's built for this opportunity. Said, I was born a Raider, growing up a fan of the team in Compton. Owner Mark Davis saying Pierce is a guy who understands the culture of the Raiders. Here's a snippet of Pierce's opening statement yesterday.
It's a new day. It's a new chapter. It's a new era. It's a new mindset. What is that mindset? It's that of the Raider pride, the commitment to excellence, and making sure our alumni, our fan base, and Raider Nation are proud of what they see on the field. This is about the players, this is about the Raiders, and this is about this organization, and we're tired of losing. It's not a good feeling. We're a production-based business. We're about competition, being competitive, and play with an edge and a swag and a certain confidence that we walk out that damn tunnel that everybody watching TV can see it, and a product on the field is something we're proud of.
News or noise, we buy in what Antonio Pierce is selling.
Well, I think you have to, right? I think you have to buy it because I think it's news because he is going, there's always that shot of adrenaline that hits into you. Now, he's also going to start a rookie quarterback against a defensive coordinator who loves to attack the protections and puts the quarterback in a really tough spot. But how worse could it be than it was with Jimmy Garoppolo on Monday night? You know, Jimmy just looks like he needs a break. Like you can't keep playing Jimmy, because the one thing I've learned in my career is when a quarterback's eye level's down like Jimmy's is, there's just no sense in playing him. There's just no sense. He's got to, like, Kurt Warner regained his eye level when he went from the Giants to the Cardinals. It takes a little bit of time, and maybe it will be for Jimmy. But what I think he's got to do is take winning out of the conversation, right? This Raider team isn't just going to show up and win, mm-hmm. right? You know, and there's no quick fixes, because people that instantly think there's a quick fix are really avoiding responsibility and discipline. That's really ultimately what happens. So, look, I think he's going to motivate the team. He's got to figure out what he can do. He's got an opponent in Daniel Jones. The fact that the Giants still remain the dog in this game with a rookie quarterback is somewhat shocking to me. It just tells you how bad the people think the Giants are. And, of course, I'm labeled a Giants hater, but how about somebody hating on the book for not making them a favorite in this game?
Well, yeah, and that's kind of where I was going to go with this game specifically. You talk about the rookie quarterback, and you're for a situation with the Raiders, there's no quick fixes, but they're still favored in this game. The Giants are going to be without Darren Waller. We know that. Brian Daboll said Daniel Jones is good to go. So that's even with the assumption that Daniel Jones is going to play, that they're still an underdog in this spot against a team that's struggling and just fired their coach. So, yes, that tells you more about the Giants.
Can you imagine you gave this guy $40 million? Can you imagine you gave this quarterback $40 million a year and you're playing against a pure rookie, a team that just fired his coach, and you're traveling on the road, and your defense has played pretty well the last couple of weeks. Your defense has played, you got to admit, their defense, Buffalo gave up 14 points. I mean, we saw a punting contest in New York with the Jets. I mean, they've played pretty good. And in Washington, they played good against the Commanders. They held the Commanders to 273. They haven't given up a 300-yard game in the last 3 weeks. And four of the last five they haven't, other than the Miami Dolphins. And yet, you're still a dog.
Yep. When it comes to Antonio Pierce, I did love the fieriness. I love the energy. We'll see how that can translate onto the field in their first outing this weekend. Now, how about the Arizona Cardinals, who traded away Josh Dobbs to the Vikings earlier this week? So will it be the rookie Clayton Tune, or will it be Kyler Murray? Some interesting comments from head coach Jonathan Gannon, who said in his presser, Kyler's fired up and ready to go. Referenced that he was excellent in team meetings this week, but did not commit one way or another. News or noise, is it reality Kyler Murray could start this week against the Browns?
I think it's news. I mean, what are we holding? What are we saving him for? If he's ready to go and you want to play him, then you got to play him. I mean, you got to play, or you got to tell us why you're not playing him. Right? Like, it's news. Like, you really going to go into Cleveland? You're an 8-point dog. The line's telling us he's not playing. The line is telling, I mean, that line went up to 8.5, I think, today. Like, can you imagine PJ Walker being an 8-point favorite against any team? Can you imagine that? Now, the line hasn't moved, right? This morning, I mean, this morning at, you know, at DraftKings here in New Jersey, that line's locked solid at 8. There's some 8.5s around, too. That tells me he's not playing.
Okay. How about going to the team that Josh Dobbs was traded to, the Minnesota Vikings? Kevin O'Connell making some comments about Kirk Cousins, who, of course, just had the surgery on his Achilles, says that their plans to push for Kirk Cousins to return as the team's QB1 in 2024. The belief was, obviously, Cousins in the final year of his contract going to be a free agent and go elsewhere after the season. But take a listen to this soundbite real quick.
We talked about different things and had some dialogue, great dialogue internally, and then just wanted to make sure that, we gave ourselves the opportunity to really go a lot of directions with the position, including, like I've said many times, Kirk Cousins is going to be healthy again. I know he's going to be a free agent after this season, but Kirk knows how I feel about him, and that'll be something that, will hopefully work itself out.
News or noise that he could come back?
I think that's noise. There's no way he's coming. I mean, you're talking about next year? Mm-hmm. No, that's news. I think it's going to come down to, I thought you were talking about this year.
No. About that, I don't even think Aaron Rodgers is coming back. He's going to, no.
No, I mean, I think it's news. I mean, look, this is going to come down to, will Cousins take a friendly contract or is he going to go to the highest bidder? Because if he wants to go to the highest bidder, I'm sure there's going to be teams out there bidding for him. Look, if Derek Carr got $40 million and he played the way he did at Las Vegas, what do you think Cousins could get in the open market playing the way he did? Now, I know he's coming off an injury, so it's a different situation. But to me, I think ultimately that's the key. And I could see him. I mean, he's comfortable in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Like, how much more money does he need to make?
Yeah, that's what we were talking about with him potentially being traded in season prior to the injury too, right? Was he likes Minnesota, his family's comfortable there, he likes his situation. Interesting thing to monitor, especially again, coming off of the injury. We're gonna step aside. Good friend of the show, Mike Somich, Beeson host, gonna join us coming up next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
With all four major sports in action, there's no better time to be a sports bettor. And with our new Sports Equinox special, no better time to be a VSiN Pro subscriber. Sign up now and get full VSiN Pro access to everything we do through May 1st for only $120, including daily best bets, unlimited access to our betting splits, plus our exclusive betting content. For college football, the rest of this NFL season, March Madness, the NBA and NHL regular seasons, as well as the NFL draft coming up in the summer. Don't miss out, though. It's a limited time offer. VSiN.com/subscribe. Is how you can sign up. Welcome back to the Lombardi Line. Speaking of the Sports Equinox, we talked about the World Series going through with the Texas Rangers getting their first in franchise history, but we've got some important topics to hit here, Michael, in no way or no doubt in the NFL. Let's roll it.
Do you disagree with these takes?
No way.
No way.
Or do you approve?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. No doubt in my mind.
No diggity, no doubt.
It's time to ask Michael Lombardi, no way or no doubt.
All right, Michael, the first big decision as interim head coach for the Las Vegas Raiders, Antonio Pierce, was that he's going to go ahead and bench Jimmy Garoppolo. Starting this week, Aiden O'Connell is going to be the starting QB. But listen, we saw last year what happened with Derek Carr when they elected with the injury guarantees just to say, hey, you go ahead and stay home. No way or no doubt, the Raiders should cut Jimmy Garoppolo before the end of the season. Similar reason, talking about that guaranteed money they'd be on the hook for.
Well, you know, the problem is, and I think it would make sense, they're not going to guarantee it based on the way he played, so they're going to get away from it. The problem would be is who's going to go in. You cannot put Brian Hoyer. I'm surprised they haven't cut Brian Hoyer yet. I would suspect that at some point they're going to cut Brian Hoyer and bring somebody else in, because you can't put Brian Hoyer in a game. Like, you just can't do that. You know, and without Josh there and without anybody else with the offense, you can't put Hoyer in the game. And you run the risk of Garoppolo getting hurt, which, in all honesty, is a really high risk, because every time he gets hit, you think he is going to get hurt, unfortunately. So I think to me, you know, if they can get through this game without using the quarterback, they got to bring two quarterbacks in, and they've got to make a decision so they can preserve whatever cap room they need for next year. Remember when McDaniels came in there, this wasn't a healthy cap either. Like, remember all the money they spent on, you know, people forget the Gruden administration when they signed Antonio Brown, all those guys they signed. Go back and look at that money they spent on that team. Just spend some time on that. People's memory is so short, but remember, they traded away Khalil Mack, they traded away Amari Cooper, and then they went back and, you know, and then they went and started to sign all these guys in free agency, and they signed Antonio Brown. Remember, they were on, what year were they on Hard Knocks, Stormy? I mean, what was it, like 2020?
Yeah, that was the Gruden year before everything came down, right? So yeah, Elliot says 2019, not 2020, but right before all that stuff happened.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, they spent a lot of money. When Gruden's first year there, he's put a lot of money in there. Look, I think the one biggest mistake the Raiders made, and Josh McDaniels and Dave Ziegler made, is when Stidham played that good game, they should have signed him. They tried to sign him, and Denver outbid him. You know, and they say, well, you know, he didn't want to compete. Well, I mean, the problem is when you take a guy and he played like he did against the 49ers, you almost have to swallow it and sign him. Like, and now they're out there, they didn't have Stidham, you know, they have to, you know, they lose out on, they can't trade up to get a quarterback, they're in the worst place you could be, and now all of a sudden you're at the mercy of Garoppolo and you have no young player. And then they wouldn't play Aiden O'Connell. Like if you had to do it all over again, you probably would have been better off just starting Aiden O'Connell at the beginning of the season.
Well, especially when he came in with the foot stuff already and having to pass the physical later when all of that information came out. And again, like when we look at the numbers here, Vegas already on the hook for another $11.25 million guaranteed next year, no matter what they do. If he gets hurt, that goes up to $25 million. So food for thought on Jimmy G. How about this next one? The winner of Sunday's Dolphins-Chiefs game will be the number one seed in the AFC this postseason. No way or no doubt.
If it's the Chiefs, no doubt. If it's the Miami, no way. How's that answer?
That's a very Michael Lombardi answer. So belief in the Chiefs, not in Miami, regardless of outcome. And I know so much of that comes back to the
Miami's
defense.
Miami's got
Miami.
A tougher road. Who's going to challenge Kansas City? I mean, Kansas City 6-2, and they haven't even played their best game yet.
Well, we have great AFC matchups this weekend. We got this one as well as Bills Bengals.
Yeah, I mean, so we got this one to start the day off Sunday morning, which will be great from Germany. And then we got other ones during the week. We got Cincy Buffalo, you know, so that'll be a great game. And we got Dallas Philly. I mean, in the NFC, you can't. I mean, there will not be anybody. I mean, if you're a burglar and you want to make a good living, you come back to the East Coast around the Philadelphia, because everybody's going to be locked in their homes. Like, there's no chance anybody's everybody's watching that game. Mm.
Okay, let's go to Green Bay. There's going to be, it's been a struggle. Let's just put it that way. It's been a struggle for Jordan Love this season. I come with positivity to the program, Michael. It's been a struggle for Jordan Love this season.
I'm going to remember that tonight. I'm going to be all positive. Everything's wonderful. Oh, you sacked the quarterback. You missed the protection. It's not a problem. I love it. It's fine. It's all good.
I'll be keeping an eye on that Twitter timeline. I'm just saying, take a note out of the positivity playbook once in a while. That's all you got to do. It's not just about Al Michaels' tie sometimes. But okay, Jordan Love, it's been a struggle for him. General manager over there with Green Bay, Brian Gutekunst, who obviously selected Love in the draft, said we've got 10 games left. It's going to be a very important 10 games. We've got to get better as a unit, and I expect that to happen over the next 10 games. So I think that, in my mind, is kind of putting Jordan Love on notice that you've got to produce. Otherwise, this isn't going to be your team moving forward, and there are other opportunities for us in the draft moving forward. No way or no doubt. Jordan Love will be the Packers quarterback in 2024. He will.
No doubt that what you just said to Gutekunst is right.
Oh, you agree with me.
Right.
Okay.
I agree with you there. No way I think Love's the quarterback next year. I just don't. I mean, unless he does something changing the course of his play over the next 8 games, 10 games, I just don't see it. I don't see how you could sit there and say we're going to do it. It's a little bit like the same dilemma Atlanta's in, right? What did we say all offseason? Ridder doesn't look like the guy, right? Ridder doesn't look like the guy, but they did. They thought he did. Now they got Heinicke, and, you know, Heinicke even says, well, it's Ritter's team, but no, now we're going to play you, Taylor. I think you got to be really careful about assuming the guy's going to be good. You got to be really careful. And now we know that there's peaks and valleys. I mean, remember, when they drafted Phillip Rivers in San Diego, Drew Brees wasn't the Drew Brees that we know. It was after they drafted him that he came and all of a sudden it clicked. It took a while.
Michael, I think you skipped along in the rundown today because the very next thing I was going to ask you, no way or no doubt, Desmond Ridder started his last game of the season for Atlanta.
No doubt. No way he has. I mean, he'll be back. Heinicke's not a – he's a middle reliever. They're going to have to come back to Ridder at some point. Ridder isn't as bad. He's not – I mean, he turns the ball over, Stormy. The thing that worries you so much about Ridder is the team has its doubts. And here's what the other thing that worries me about Ridder is when you watch this Falcon team. Now, we know they spent a lot of money on the skill. They've done everything that I would never do, which is draft offensive skill players. But they think their line's great. They think their line is really good. I mean, Ritter's been sacked 25 times already this year. And it isn't because he's holding the football now. You know, I mean, it's like he's getting sacked way too much. You know, for 8 games, I mean, that's way too much.
Not all on him, but it hasn't been good. And between that and the interceptions, just the fumbles in the red zone, like things that you can't do. Now, you think Ridder will be back.
Can I put it in perspective for you, though? As bad as Ridder is, as bad as he's played, and he's not great, he's still yards per attempt is higher than Daniel Jones ever in his career.
Gosh, Daniel Jones. Again, Daniel Jones back at quarterback, it appears, this week against the Raiders, and the Giants are still an underdog. We'll talk more about that game here in a little bit. Last one in no way or no doubt. We say Ridder will be back. Will Ryan Tannehill be back? No way or no doubt, Ryan Tannehill has started his last game with the Titans. It's Will Levis' team this year.
No doubt. I mean, they did not redo any part of Tannehill's contract. They wanted the flexibility. They wanted no more cap debt on Will Lewis, on Tannehill. It's over. He's going to be on another team next year. Where that will be, I don't know. But you got to be really careful about that, too, because, you know, you've got to be really worried about, is he going to be able to stay healthy? Because Tannehill, the last couple seasons, has not stayed healthy.
Yep, obviously dealing with the ankle right now, but okay. And the music, that's today's edition of No Way or No Doubt. This is one of my like most enjoyable segments, but today I think I did a bad job of teeing you up on things. I was giving my opinion and then I made you say No Way or No Doubt. I got to just stick to it. Just stick to the question. Stick to the question. But no, this is fun. I love it. We're going to take a step aside.
It's all positive. It's all positive.
Positive Pollies, Michael and Stormy on the Twitter timeline today during Thursday Night Football. Get excited, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to take a quick timeout. When we come back, final half hour of the show, we'll have Mike Palm join us in set here in Las Vegas, VP of Circa Resort and Casino. Talk all things Circa contests and beyond with Palm's Pressing 3. Don't miss it.
Former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSiN.com and check out the current betting splits data. Want to know where the money and bets are moving for every game? The betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public's betting based on the number of tickets and where the money can't match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits, another way VSiN's here to make you a more informed, better year-round. Check out those betting splits for every game at VSiN.com. Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni, and Mike Palm with us as it is time for Palms Pressing 3.
Okay, here we go, Michael. Question one. Mike Florio has said that it's more than a whisper that the new Commanders ownership will reach out to Robert Kraft after the season in an attempt to obtain the rights to Bill Belichick. Does this move make sense for all parties?
Well, I mean, look, if you're Washington and you can get a coach like Belichick, don't you have to make the call? How many other teams should call? Chicago? Should Carolina call? I mean, you know, it's just not limited to the teams that perhaps are having bad seasons. It's limited to the teams that are having maybe their little doubts about their coach. Should the Falcons call? Should the Saints call? I mean, clearly this is, you know, somebody's saying something about perhaps he's available. Now, where that comes from, I don't know. But I know this. There's no better coach in the league who's getting better at his job. Does every coach go through some tough times? Of course. Pete Carroll's going through some tough times too, you know, and they all do. Sean McVay's going through some tough times. I mean, Sean McVay gets a pass. He won one Super Bowl. Belichick can't get a pass because he's won six. And, of course, Brady won every one of them. You know, Brady played offense and defense. I don't know if you missed that, Mike. He played offense, defense, and in the kicking game. He did everything in all six Super Bowls. Belichick just showed up, and he basically put his headset on him. When the game was over, he gave it back to him. So, yeah. I mean, that's how ridiculous people are with this conversation. And you're talking about one of the greatest coaches of all time. Why wouldn't you call?
I go back to the first Super Bowl with Madden saying Belichick was out of his mind for trying to run a 2-minute drill with Brady. Just go to overtime.
There you go. And here's about that Super Bowl. You know, all the geniuses, Asante Samuel and all these people that go on TV and say it's all Brady. Brady threw for 134 yards in that game. 134 yards. They played the greatest show on turf. They ran for 133. In the last Super Bowl, just so we get this out there, the MVP of the game was Julian Edelman. They scored 13 points. It takes both of them together to win. Don Shula went 4 years without Dan Marino. With Dan Marino, didn't even make the playoffs. It's really the laziest narrative you could possibly ever hear. They need each other. And great quarterbacks with a great coach win championships.
And great quarterbacks, it's no secret, especially based on what we've seen this year, hard to come by. You mentioned Shula, though, Michael, so I'm going to sneak in a question here real quickly and interrupting the Pressing Three. Don't hate me. But do you think that he'll have a better opportunity to beat the record in a place like Washington than he would remaining in New England?
No, I disagree with the narrative New England has no talent. New England lacks a quarterback. I mean, you know, they've missed their two best defensive players against Miami, and they held them to 31 points, and really it should have been a little less based on a call, but they're not as bad as you think. They really aren't. They got to get their offensive line fixed. There's no question. They need more juice at the receiver position. No question. But they're not as bad. You put Josh Allen on their team. You don't think New England's defense is better than the Bills' defense?
Question two.
Yeah, mine was 1A. 1A.
1A. Question two. Michael, you do a great job with the Daily Coach and reflecting on leadership at all levels in all sports. Last night, we lost Bob Knight, who, when he retired, had the most wins in the history of college basketball, tied for fourth all time with three national titles, and certainly was an icon in both the college basketball world and the state of Indiana. What are the great lessons to be learned from Bob Knight?
I think Bob Knight considered himself a teacher. Bob Knight was a curious person who read quite a bit. I think if you go back to his childhood where he just devoured books as a young kid and he studied the game and he was a historian of the game, you know, and he respected those who came before him. And he had a belief in a code as a coach. He's going to play man-to-man. He was going to teach man-to-man. Situational. I think when you watched his practices, for all the people that want to criticize him, if you ever just went and watched his practices, you would have been amazed at how organized and detailed they were and how he was able to bring everybody to the level that they needed to get to in terms of performance. A coach's job is to get the best out of every player. And that's what Knight did. And he was a teacher. Why did he not let people into his practice? Because the chemistry teacher doesn't let people into their classroom. Because they're both teachers. And I think that's was. I learned a lot from watching him work. I learned a lot from conversations with him and Belichick. And I learned a lot about the perspective of understanding how to see the game and what causes you to win and what causes you to lose.
Three national titles, 900 wins, and he only coached one NBA All-Star. Isaiah Thomas. Now, Landon Turner would have been an NBA All-Star had he not crashed the car. And that whole story upon itself tells you a lot about Bobby Knight. Okay, Michael, the last question I wrote on Monday night late as the game was ending in Detroit, not knowing what was going to happen the rest of the week. And here's the question. With 8:08 left in the first half and having been thoroughly outplayed and the field tilted in Detroit's favor, the Raiders got the ball only down 9-0. They embarked on a 75-yard, 10-play drive featuring Josh Jacobs with runs of 9 yards, 4 yards, 7 yards, 6 yards, 6 yards, and 3 yards for a touchdown to bring the game to 9-7. The most similar drive I could think of was Super Bowl 28, where tied 13-13, Dallas got the ball back after a Bills punt and featured Emmitt Smith on a 64-yard drive, which he rushed the ball 6 times out of the 7 plays, totally taking the life out of the Bills at the end of their dynasty. Emmitt Smith rushed for 12 more times in the last 18 minutes of that game. Josh Jacobs rushed 3 more times in the last 33 minutes of that game. How is that possible?
Because I think a lot of it is we're trying to get the ball to this receiver. We're trying to get the ball to this guy. And this is what I've said from the beginning. And, you know, my son worked there, and I've said this to them. I've said it to Josh, who I consider a very good friend. But to me, when you build a team around a receiver, a star receiver, and you have other problems with your team, you're going to have problems with that team because the receiver's not getting the ball. Right? The receiver's not getting the football. And so that's what happens. And all of a sudden, instead of running an offense, you run a way to get the ball to the receiver, which you should do. You should be about the players, but it does sacrifice. I mean, the fourth down play in the first quarter, I think it was in the first quarter at midfield. If he checks it down to Josh Jacobs, it's a first down for 10 yards, but he keeps looking down the field to throw it, right? Because everybody wants the ball to go to Adams. I think a lot of times when you're trying to force the ball to people, you lose your rhythm. And, the offense that they were running in Las Vegas was not an offense that I was really familiar with based on my experience in New England. You know, I think they got away from what they did best last year, which was run the football. But again, you know, you're trying to make everybody happy. And what happens? No one's happy. So I agree, Mike. I mean, look. You know, the one thing you can't do in this profession is if your expertise is offense as a head coach and the offense is bad, you're going to lose your job. You are going to lose your job. And the Raiders' inability to pay attention to their offensive and defensive lines in the offseason in the last few years, I mean, and this has been going on for a while, is the reason why they can't catch Kansas City or the Chargers or even Denver.
Watching Jimmy Garoppolo this year, I wonder if that was the right decision at all coming into this year, bringing him on, because obviously we have the injury standpoint, but then the way that he's been missing throws and missing guys. And then we talked yesterday, Michael, yep, about the phantom pressure too, that maybe goes back to the injuries and just how he's feeling. It just hasn't worked out. It's unfortunate. Now we see him bench this week for the first time.
Well,
When Josh comes in, you know, everybody wants to get rid of Carr, but they kind of let it go through with Carr. I mean, like Josh wasn't the reason Carr left. The organization was not happy with where they were going back to the Gruden administration. So, like, that was a change that was inevitably happening. The problem is the expectations of once you got rid of him. And then, like you said, Stormy, what are we doing? You know, if we're going to get rid of Carr, we better draft one early. We better get one. We better figure out a way to get up to get one. And they never really did that. And then they didn't sign Stidham back to protect themselves. So now they're teaching an offense to somebody that's new who hasn't played it in 6 years. It starts to become a problem. And a lot of this is a design problem, which then becomes a production problem. And that's why everybody's fingerprints, including Champ Kelly, who was the assistant GM, are involved in making some of these bad decisions. And all these bad decisions is why Dave Ziegler got fired and Josh got fired. Essentially, you get paid for the performance on the field and bad decisions. But when you lose a lead to Arizona, when you lose to Baker Mayfield, when you lose to Saturday in the park, when you lose to a Shepherd quarterback, you're going to lose your job.
Awesome show today, Mike. Appreciate your time as always. Thanks to Mike Somich, who joined us earlier in the program as well. That's a wrap for today's edition of the Lombardi Line. Stick around on VSiN and DraftKings Network, the Sharp Money Crew, or Pablo Torre, depending on where you're watching, coming up next.